This is the Average Guy Network, and you have found Home Gadget Geeks, show number 247, recorded on February 4th, 2016. Here at Home Gadget Geeks, we cover all the favorite tech gadgets that find their way into your home. News, reviews, product updates, and conversation, all for the average tech guy. I'm your host, Jim Collison, broadcasting live from the Average Guy TV studios here in Bellevue, Nebraska. And, of course, we post the show with world-class show notes each week out at theaverageguy.tv. Of course, you can join us live on the new mobile app as well. If you're ever traveling, this is actually a great way. If you're traveling and you want to get the audio Home Gadget Geeks, head out to our new mobile app sponsored by LastPass. And actually, we're going to have LastPass on, I think, next week. Amber's going to come on, and you know, Amber's going to have a baby here soon, so we're going to get her on before she goes on maternity leave. Catch up, but we want to thank LastPass for supporting their mobile app. If you want to get access to that, HomeGadgetGeeks.com, all one word, HomeGadgetGeeks.com, and the buttons for both Android and iPhone. No Windows out there, but Android and iPhone are out there. Thank LastPass, or we'll thank LastPass for the sponsorship and Spreaker for hosting that. And those are video audio only, but if you want to get that, I've heard from a lot of our listeners that listen to that while they're traveling on the plane. It doesn't get blocked by most Wi-Fi on the plane, so it's a great way to listen to it if you're flying on a Thursday night. Home Gadget Geeks, of course, is a part of the Geeks Network. You can find the link to this show and many other great podcasts out at the Geeks Network, including Mike Wieger's Open Mic Night, which he recorded just last night out at thegeeksnetwork.com. All right, well, we've had an hour worth of podcasting already. We were hanging out early on Blab, talking about why we're leaving Blab to come back to Google Hangouts, for at least for the recording bit. We won't bore you with any of those things, but I want to welcome these guys back to the show. Mike Wieger, welcome back.
Thanks for having me back. Yeah, it's good to be here. I like this pre-show thing. It gets you warmed up, gets you in the mode of podcasting before we actually get into the real deal.
I don't know, man. I'm kind of tired.
Just, all right, we're going to shut it down. That was a great podcast, done. Everyone. We'll see you next week. All right.
Good night, everybody. All right, and then sitting over in the other chair and joined us for the whole time, Nathaniel Lindley. Nathaniel, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me back on the show.
No, good to have you. I didn't intend for you to, like, hang out a whole extra hour in advance, but you jumped in on the Blab site. Did you learn anything with our whole one-hour Blab experience before we went live?
Yeah, I'm just... I'll just stick to being a guest, not a host.
That is a fantastic idea.
Yeah. So there's some questions in the chat room. Which chat should you follow? You can do either one. I'll be looking at both, either or. We've got we're using Chatwing on the Hangout side. We're using the embedded chat that's in the Blab side. I'll watch both. The intent was to gather some engagement from the platform of Blab when we moved over here. It's been getting out of sync. If you go back and watch any of the videos, and maybe this will lead to a spike in my RSS views or my YouTube videos. If you want to watch something funny, go back and watch last week. Mike Howard was on, Mike Wieger, with us, and we talked about Unraid. Go back and watch that one. Wieger is static the whole podcast.
I did a very good job of keeping very still. I didn't get distracted the entire show.
Man, you were on the mic the whole time. It was such stellar mic work. It was incredible, and it's just funny because I didn't even notice it. I was in a hurry last Friday when I was getting those ready. I was going to be out of town. I had a whole bunch of stuff I needed to do, so I just cranked it out, sliced off the end, sliced off the beginning and the end, put the music in there, rendered it, didn't even watch it.
Well, I was watching myself, and it took me 7 minutes to realize that I was frozen. I'm like, man, I am just very still during this entire time. So, wow. Yeah, I didn't even notice for the longest time.
So if you haven't done that, head back to the YouTube. You want to watch it on YouTube. We have RSS feeds for video. If you've been watching the show for a while, maybe you forgot, head out to theaverageguy.tv/subscribe. It's a little bit of an overwhelming page, but I wanted to give you every way known to man that you could subscribe to this podcast. So TuneIn and Stitcher and Spreaker and RSS feeds for audio and video. We have a video large and a video small. If you haven't checked those out, theaverageguy.tv/subscribe. All right, we talked about some gadgets. Nathaniel, we had talked a little bit, but let's do this. Let's open with this topic because we started the Blab piece with it. There have been a new class of light bulbs that all of a sudden have speakers embedded in them that are coming out from various manufacturers. I think there's one or two or maybe even three of those out now. I do kind of see that being as a trend because we can get now lights and speakers in places, an easy setup, right? A very easy setup to be able to get lights and speakers in your house in different places. You can plug them in a can. You could even come in, you know, I could even have it come out of a lamp and have, you know, have music playing throughout the house. Nathaniel, you're kind of in the same spot I am. Where are you at, or where do you stand on this combination of speakers and lamp or in lights?
Well, I think there's benefits to doing that as long as you're not looking for high quality speakers. Obviously, consolidating the space in your room and taking advantage of power in the ceiling location is going to be appealing to home theater as long as it's not expected to be a very high quality speaker. I think the application that would be really good is, if you wanted whole house audio and you were trying to play music in multiple rooms or just kind of ambient music in a room, that's my guess, would be the best application of that.
Yeah, I think spreading out music across the house, I don't know if I'd expect home theater quality out of those, nor do I think I would use them in a home theater setup, right? Those speakers are kind of specialized. Mike, do you think, I mean, talk about being able in an apartment to be able to put in kind of a whole house or whole apartment audio. Is that enticing to you at all, or you just spend $1 million getting all your lights upgraded at this point?
Well, that's the thing. Spending a lot of money on the lights, and then also it's kind of counterintuitive because in an apartment, one speaker does a great job. We have one echo in our apartment, and we put it centrally in the apartment, and you can hear it from anywhere. So for us, really, it's one speaker is really all you need in our tiny space. But yeah, upgrading the lights, man, I feel like I'm just getting done now trying to upgrade the lights, so doing it again probably is not on my high priority list. But still, a very cool concept.
Carol Ann had asked in chat if you have to use the lights for the speakers to work. And no, I think the point is that the lights and the speakers work independently. One of the cool things when we think about, and I don't know, I have the Philip Hue. I think you do too, Mike.
Yep, I do.
They've got like scenes that you can set up. And so you can pick these various scenes and it'll dim. And if you get the colored lights, they'll do some really funky color stuff in them. So I think that operation would be all independent. So you could come in and say, set the mood, and then set the music. And so maybe you've got some, you got that Kenny G channel for when, you know, you're looking for smooth sound. You got that AC/DC, you know, the lights are going to flash, and you got the AC/DC going on. So I think, no, you're going to be able to operate those independently. I do. I think it's cool. These are V1, and I'm not sure I'm really a big fan of V1 for anything. So I would probably hold off at this point before getting them. JBL is getting in the mix. I think that's the one we had somebody throw a chat or a link in the chat earlier, and I think those are JBL speakers kind of embedded around that light. I'm interested, you know, the light creates some frequency issues. The speaker creates some magnetic issues. We know light and electricity and magnetism are not necessarily friends all the time, and so it would be interesting to see how they solve those problems. Mike, do you think, certainly at this point, they've got maybe those physics solved, don't you think?
Well, I would definitely hope so. But at the same time, I was the same person who, in my dorm room in college, the Wi-Fi unit for pretty much our entire floor was in my bedroom of the dorm and was right above me. And I just worried that something bad was happening with that. I was going to wake up one day and just be super sick from sleeping under this really high-powered Wi-Fi antenna. But no, in all seriousness, yeah, I think they probably do have all those worked out. But I'm the same with you. When it comes to being a part of something that's V1, with the exception of the Apple Watch, I hopped in on V1, but everything else I usually tend to give it, you know, a few iterations and we see how much better it is, and I'm already wishing I had done that with the Philips Hue lights just because of the hub. The hub that I have is not HomeKit compatible, so if I want to have HomeKit work with my lights, I need to upgrade to the new hub. So just one more thing that I maybe should have waited till V2 for.
So yeah. I just looked on Amazon, guys, and most of the speakers are like $25-$30. But the JBL ones are $145.
Of course they are.
For a pair. Yeah. So they're probably really good speakers.
$90 each or whatever, and that turns out to be $80 each.
Hey, but how much would you pay for one speaker? How much would you pay for one light bulb? Put them together and it's about $70, you know. So
it's true. Some of those LED can lights are $30 a piece. So
yeah.
Take that, you know. And maybe, yeah. And I was commenting that, like, thinking back, multicolor changing lights with speakers in a dorm room would be awesome.
Oh, yeah. I can guarantee it's going to be a big hit, especially with a certain population in college. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think 2016 will be the year when a lot of these standards get kind of worked out. We've got a couple different standards. We got different hubs. We got different bits of compatibility. we talked about this on the kind of in the show at the end of the year, like what needs to happen, and there needs to be standardization. One or two companies need to rise to the top and everybody follow that standard. And so I think we still have that to happen. But I think we're going to see more and more of those kinds of devices, those creative devices come online. And when we think of the Internet of Things, this is a good, these are two great tastes that go great together, right? When we think about light and music, lots of stuff that you could do with them. And I think lots of different applications that will be available for them. So certainly expensive now. You know, we're seeing those Philips Hue lights. They're $20 each. The colored ones, the ones that change colors, those are $60 each. $60 for a light bulb. This is like the days, I remember back in like 1992 when I was paying $65 for telephone service, right? And remember when long distance, well, you wouldn't, Uyghur, but when long distance was, you had to pay for long distance, right? Nobody knows what those...
Is that like paying for Skype credits or something? I don't know. I'm very confused.
It's kind of like it, yes. And they charge you by the minute, and there were surge charges like Uber. Like there were surge charges. Gotcha. So when during the evening, okay, see how we relate? This is how I relate to the millennial.
It's perfect. Yeah.
So it all makes sense. But I remember just grinding on how expensive phones were, and now I willingly fork that over for a cell phone and don't even think twice about it. Now we get a million more times functionality out of our cell phones than we ever got out of that landline. But I think we'll see with these devices, I think we'll see the price come down. Speaking of devices, Nathaniel, let's switch gears a little bit here with you. One of the things we have to think about in the connected home, especially if we're wiring everything, is just the absolute sheer number of Ethernet ports that we need inside the house, right? I have 2 8-port routers that are full. They're completely full in here in my house. So I have 16 things coming out about it. You know, you think about I've got a wireless access point. I have 2 network connections. I got one going for my light bulbs. I've got 4 PCs here. I've got all this stuff coming in here, and I've filled up every space. You recently kind of made a change over. What'd you get?
Yeah. So I'm curious. Like, did you say your light bulbs are wired?
Well, the hub for it is wired.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, it needs a connection. It needs a connection.
What so kind of light bulbs are those? But yeah.
From like 1984.
Huh. Well, man, a PoE, maybe. Yeah, it's cheaper than running high voltage cables. If it's LED, it's like 6 watts, and you could run that over a Cat 5. So
there you go.
All right, I just invented something.
That's I was going to say, that's our new idea. Shut it down. We're going to start talking about this idea.
Light your home with Cat 6.
Yeah, there we go.
So recently, this winter, in my little network hub where the cable comes in and the cable modem and then a PF sense box and then a breakout 8-port switch, and then there's a few runs that run from there into other rooms that was pre-wired in the house. Not always the best location and only one, but it's something. And because of a certain podcast where someone likes to try things and then talk about how they're good and then I end up trying them too, I needed more centrally connected devices. And so that 8-port switch got filled up. And so I didn't want to cascade down the chain with these devices. And then I didn't want to unplug certain things. So I ended up upgrading from an 8-port dumb switch. It was just an unmanaged Netgear 8-port. And researched and ended up getting a 16-port smart managed or semi-managed switch from Netgear. Yeah, to add more ports, basically, but I like the idea of having some management possibilities. So I researched some different models and prices and ended up going with the Netgear again, and it was the ProSafe GS116E, which is sort of their middle switch port or managed switch. It's not unmanaged, but it's not fully managed. So it has a nice simple web interface. I can start to use VLANs if I wanted to do that down the road. I can use QoS rules to prioritize traffic. And the other thing is kind of nice, it just has a little more visibility into what the switch is doing. So it has port monitoring, and you can see traffic statistics, not like live bandwidth graphs. That'd be cool. But you can see statistics on ports, like these are working. It also has a really simple cable test feature. So I know that the port that runs through the walls and the ceilings to another location where there's another 8-port switch, I can see that cable through the wall is sound.
Oh, that's great. That by itself is sometimes worth it when you've run these cables and you don't know. It's not working, right? And you're like, this is not working. So that's a good feature.
Yeah, eliminate your variables. You know, okay, this piece is solid. Now what's wrong? And I think what happened is the way the house is laid out, I have this central switch by the router and things like that. And then there's an 8-port switch off of that and then another 8-port switch off of that because of the way the rooms are. And it's not ideal, but it's all I have to work with without running new wire, which is more difficult in a fully sealed basement. So I've been really happy with this switch. It took a little getting set up and setting it, but the only problem I had with this was it has IGMP snooping enabled by default, and from what I'm reading, that is supposed to improve your multicast congestion. So Apple AirPlay uses multicast, and apparently Windows Media Center extenders connection use multicast, because all of a sudden I was having a lot of problems using AirPlay with some speakers I have upstairs in the kitchen and AirPort Express, and it would connect but drop, and then I'd have to restart, and then my Xbox 360, which is a media extender, couldn't find the home theater PC, and I'd have to go downstairs and restart it and then do this, and sometimes I have to repair it. And I thought, well, this is just really strange. I've never had these problems before. And I was reading, and IGMP snooping is supposed to help with that, so I turned it off, disabled it, and then I haven't had any problems. So apparently in my network, it's okay to let multicast just run all over the place, and there's not too much congestion.
And so I threw up on the Hangout side, I threw up the link for it that you put in there on Amazon, and so 126 today on Amazon using Prime. I'm assuming that's what you paid for it. Well, not too bad for 16. And so how full is it now? How many of those have you?
I think I have 10 in there. So I went from 8 to 10, and you know, they like I said, if you look down there, they have a couple different versions. It's not one of their full managed versions. It's unmanaged plus, they call it. So. And one of the reasons I went with this model was because it was the layout was good, where it had a power cord in the back and then all the ports on one side, and the lights were by the ports. I don't know if it matters a lot to some people, but some switches, they'll have a light on one side of the switch and then the port on the back side. So it's hard to correspond. Like, I'm looking at light number one blinking, and is that one on the left when I look at it from the front or the back? And so having the lights and ports numbers all on one side was important. And that style is thin and long and easily mountable on a wall. So that's why I went with that. They have a little click one that is supposed to be great for clicking on a conference table or putting somewhere, and I had considered that, but I thought, well, I really don't have a need for that. The other thing this switch has is nice is it does have the energy savings. So I believe when ports are not being used, it powers them down, and it can ramp up the power depending on what it needs for the length of the cable, maybe? I'm not sure. But I thought, you know, every little bit I can save on power is going to be beneficial.
Is ag power pretty expensive where you're at, or is it just a matter of principle on the power?
Mostly principle. I'm not sure what we pay. It's probably 10 or 11 cents. Does that sound?
Kilowatt or whatever that
is.
I couldn't tell you. That's it's something I've never figured out. I know in California and on the coasts, it's a lot more expensive, and so those kinds of things matter. Mike, do we ever think about – I never think about power here in the Midwest. I probably should.
Not really. I did some research into it just to see how much my PF Sense box was pulling in, but it's the only time I've ever looked up prices on it.
Do you remember what the price per kilowatt or whatever that is, the cents per...
I want to say 6 cents.
Okay.
So it can be cheap. Up to 10, and when you pass a certain threshold, you drop down to 6. So.
On a surge type deal.
So. Yeah.
Okay, sounds good. Nathaniel, any thought of going to the 24? I mean, the 24 port was just... you know, another $15. Any thought of going to 24 to future-proof yourself?
No. And the reason is that I don't have enough room to plug stuff in that little closet, and there's not that many runs that go from this central location out to rooms.
Okay.
So 8 is it would have been enough. I think I have 5 or 6 runs, and then you have the PF Sense, and now I have a circle, thanks Dave McCabe, And I have a new access point, which I'll talk about, and then the HD Home Run, the Vonage converter. So, I mean, once you add those little appliances that all need a port, it kind of adds up.
Did you happen to check? One thing I heard as a rumor, and I'm not a homeowner, so I don't know, but is that a lot of these homes, if they're relatively new, they wired all the telephone lines with actually Cat 5 or Cat 6 cabling.
Yeah, that's what they did. When they remodeled the house. Yeah, in 2008, they remodeled this house before we moved in, and all the runs are Cat 5e, which is great. I just would have done two cables per run, two runs, you know, per
room. But at least all your rooms, wherever you would have had a telephone wire, you would have had.
Yeah. Yep.
And they actually, I've been looking into, like, when we buy a house, I'm almost like wanting to take a screwdriver with me and see if all the telephone, because I'm never going to use a landline, so it doesn't matter to me. I'm never going to use that port, and if I can convert that to all Ethernet, could be useful.
Right, and I had to go and change the Keystone jack and all the plates,
because
they wired with Cat 5e, but then put RJ11 jacks in the wall, and I'm like, what?
Yeah.
That doesn't help, because you can put in RJ45 jacks and use simple phone cords, so I don't know why. It's what they're used to, but I replaced that and labeled everything right away so I could remember which one was where. But yeah, it's really nice to have good wiring between rooms and not have to depend on wireless solely.
Kevin asked the question on the blab, what's the name of the switch again? And so this is a Netgear ProSafe GS116E. I threw that in the chat room.
Correct.
As well, and then the link to it, the Amazon link to it, is there if you want to. Lopta asked, does that use your affiliate code? I don't know. I don't think.
No, I just took a short link.
Probably didn't. If you want to use the Average Guy Tech Scholarship Fund, which we use to buy equipment for folks to test, before you buy it, just go over to theaverageguy.tv/Amazon and then rebuy it through that way. And we get a little bit of credit for it. You guys have done a great job over the holidays. You bought more cables than anybody that's known to man. You could tell what everybody got for Christmas, because in the Amazon, and I can't tell who bought what, but I get a list of what everybody bought, and there was a bazillion cables in there.
Are you talking iPhone cables, Jim?
I am talking iPhone cables.
Did you notice a lot of OtterBox cases?
I did notice a lot of OtterBox.
Jim and I had this conversation. We were wondering who this
was. Yeah, that was me. You.
Yeah. No, that was me work.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. If you're new to the show, we have what's called the Average Guy Tech Scholarship Fund, and if you want to, I'll buy something for you using those funds we get from Amazon. You get to test it, Nathaniel. You've done that in the past for us, where we bought things. Actually, we are working on Lopt is going to put together I'm going to call it an open source hacked together baby monitor. Both Lopta and Kyle have had babies in the last, well, not them, but their wives, have had babies in the last, although they probably feel like it's been them, in the last couple weeks. Kyle's hasn't, did Kyle's arrive? I don't think it has yet. Maybe it has. Anyways, we shipped Kyle's. Lopta, I'm waiting for some parts from you so we can get that put together. But we buy it for you, you test it, you write a little bit about it, and then it goes on theaverageguy.tv. So if you want to take advantage of that, we call that the Tech Scholarship Fund. And appreciate you when you guys purchase through Amazon, theaverageguy.tv/Amazon gets it done. You also replaced, that was a nice segue, because you also replaced an Airport Extreme, an Airport Express, and a Linksys access point with OpenMesh. How's that gone?
Really pretty well. So previously, I've been happy with my pfSense router, other than it's a bigger Atom-based PC that probably draws more power than I need. So down the road, I'm going to look for one of those micro Pico PCs that has two NIC ports. But I don't want to invest the money because this is working right now. But anyway, so that was doing my DHCP, my routing, my firewall, my DNS. And then I had three wireless access points hanging off the network in different locations in the house. One upstairs, an Airport Express, broadcasting and connected to speakers. And then I had an Airport Extreme and one end of the basement and a Linksys E2500 or 52, whatever, to try to get the signal across the house upstairs, downstairs. And they all had the same SSID, so your phone didn't really notice, but there would be issues where you're stuck on one access point and you go across the house and the signal gets low and it doesn't transfer over to the next access point. So I kind of felt like that was one overkill, three broadcasts in a small house like this, and my wife had issues frequently when she was connected to the wireless and VPN to work. So she'd just disconnect every couple hours or something. And so over on the Home Server Show forums, I was following a thread with a couple of the posters there, mostly started by IT Geeks, and I don't remember his full name, so my apologies. And PC Doc and Jason were discussing the new Open Mesh MR1750 wireless AC. They call it a gateway, but access point. And so I started looking into it, and I thought, wow, this is a lot like Meraki, because it's a cloud-based controller. You throw these access points in, they have really good radios, and then a lot of wireless access point-focused features. So instead of trying to be an all-in-one box like a Linksys or a Netgear, you know, or Comcast or CenturyLink, whatever they give you, it's kind of focused on, I'm just going to do wireless. Give me an Ethernet, and I'll do the rest. And so it's pretty expensive, so I was a little hesitant at first, but doing some reading and research and watching their thread this fall, talking about their experience and what they've done, I felt pretty confident it would be a good move, and I really like it. So now I just have one, and it's in that same closet, right on that 16-port switch connected to PFSense, so it's very central, and it's been really, really good for me.
We are showing that on the Hangout side, so if you want to take a peek and showing that Open Mesh item,
yep,
that's out there, if you want to see that available to you. So what kind of performance, you've been happy with it so far? I mean, it's kind of working the way you want it to?
Yeah, so it's because it's cloud controlled, you go to their Cloud Tracks website to set it up, and you also have an iPhone app that you can monitor and change settings on. There's a little more features on the web interface, and it's not 100% parity. But you set it up, and then basically you have multiple SSIDs that you can set up. So one of the things I wanted to accomplish was a guest network. And so SSID 1 is going to be by default your guest. Client isolation, which means if you have a phone, it's not going to see somebody else's laptop on it. It's basically each client goes straight to the internet. Nothing to the LAN, nothing to your wired clients, nothing to your internal wireless, just straight out, which is what you want of a guest network. And I've tried to set up guest networks before for family, and it says it's a guest network, but I can do a network scan and see everything on their network, you know, so it didn't, maybe I set it up wrong, but it didn't work. So that was one goal. Then SSID 2 is pretty much everything else. So that's inside. You set it to bridge to your VLAN, or your, not VLAN, but your wired side, so that your internal SSID 2 can talk to Windows wired devices and Xboxes and Apple Airport Expresses that are wired with the wireless turned off. So after that, it's I didn't have to change much. What I do really like about it is it gives you a lot more visibility into your wireless network. So for example, you can see all the clients that are on your wireless network, and it'll tell you the MAC address, the IP address. It'll try to identify what operating system is running. So is it an Android device, a Windows device, an iOS device? It'll give you the name of the device depending on how it broadcasts its host name. So some are super easy, like my iPhone, and others don't get reported, like Amazon Echo or Ecobee 3. So that client visibility of what's running on your wireless, and it gives you graphs. I don't know if you can see... I don't know if I can pull up my own, but they might have some sample graphs, Jim.
Yeah, we can see it on the Hangout side if you share your screen and bring those up.
Yeah, give me a second.
Yeah.
And it shows you client and bandwidth.
Here we go. It sounds like a nicely managed device. I mean, it's kind of one access point to rule them all, so to speak. It sounds like while you're pulling that up, it sounds like you have quite a bit of stuff going through that. I mean, you got a lot of stuff in the house, right?
Yeah. So let me. Okay. How do I share screen? Right here.
Yeah. The green. The box.
And then I pick the window. I'll just pick the main one and then move it over. Yeah. Maybe. Yeah, hang on.
Are there going to be IP addresses and stuff that you don't want to...
Let's see. It has device names. It has internal IPs. I think it'll be all right. But let me move it to a new window. so that it's it'll be a smaller resolution, which I think I'll do better on the Hangout. This one. Let's try screen two. All right. Perfect. Do you see it?
Yep.
Perfect. Oh, yeah. Nice.
So this is the network overview called LindleyNet, incredibly creative naming. And you can see a graph in yellow is the number of clients over time for the last 24 hours. The blue graph is download. The beige magenta is upload. And then it tells you what's been going on. You know, top applications, iTunes, Google, YouTube, MediaFire, because it's always running in the background, Facebook. And then you get your client list, your top clients. And this would be my son watching videos. There's mine, a Chromebook, a Chromebit, which I'll get to later, you know, in the Chromebooks. And then your device count. So you can see I had 8 iOS devices on the network in the last 24 hours, 4 Google Chrome devices, 2 Windows, 1 Mac, and 1 older Windows machine. And then I think it's targeted, the whole Open Mesh CloudTrax is targeted at small or large companies that are providing services. So there's some features on here I wouldn't need, like, the window got messed up. Does this still look all right to you?
Yeah, it looks good here. Are you?
Oh, right. There we go.
Okay.
So it has features in there that I won't use, like vouchers. So I can create a PayPal request so that if someone wants to join my network as a guest, it'll be a captive portal, and they have to pay PayPal credit to me to use my wireless. I should probably do that with my in-laws when they come and visit, but I have a few months to figure that out.
I think your son's your biggest user. I mean, I think you could get a lot from him if you really wanted to.
Yeah, right. Put your allowance credit in here, you know.
Yeah, right. If you want to use part of your allowance, you can.
Man, that's a great idea.
It gives you more detailed client view if you want, and you can choose which SSID you want to look at. So, you know, I set up the guest SSID on one, and certain devices you might want to put on there, and you know, a simple SSID, a simple password, so that people aren't saying, oh, I want to get on your Wi-Fi, what's the password? And they're like, here's this 26-character string, good luck typing it. So that's really nice. And then you can see what's on your internal network. You could block clients, so if you notice a neighbor is joining your network or a friend or something, you can kick them off. If you had multiple access points, you could manage multiple places. So if I was a small business IT support and I put one of these in business A and business B, I could manage all these access points from this panel that are around the globe or country. I only have one, but it works pretty well. Where was the traffic graph? Wanted to see that one. Access points, network overview, and it gives you uptime. You know, how long has it been up and running? All right, top clients, top devices, top applications. There's the location. You didn't see that. maybe that's not. There's traffic. The interesting thing is you can go to, like, the last 2 hours. So here's this download data and all YouTube. So, you know, it just helps you to know what's going on in your network.
Yeah. Gives you some management, some capabilities to see what's happening. If you're a data geek or a data junkie, you kind of like to, you know, see it.
I would guess, and some of the folks in chat would probably know better than me, that you could probably set this up for some SNMP traps and pull some of these statistics out of the access point or somehow get it out that you could put it in other graphs and get more history than what you just give on the website. But I, at this point, I just want to see live. Okay, so it was about January 11th that I started it. And so one thing I did after putting in the new switch and putting in this single access point is while we were on winter holiday, my son had some friends over. I'm like, okay, guys, get every device you can find in the house. Everything you can, and either stream a video or music or something to try to use up bandwidth. Let's do a stress test of this new network. We got a new managed switch, and we got a new access point. And so they went through, and we had over 23, or I think 23 devices on the network at one time, all streaming. So that means the Amazon Echo was playing music. I had a Windows phone playing Groove music. I had Android tablet playing YouTube. I had a Mac, a couple Macs playing Vimeo. And by the way, Vimeo will give you a lot of high quality, high bandwidth video nonstop. I forgot about it and it left it running overnight. So in the morning, I'm like, what's all this Vimeo use? And I realized I left that one on. But if you want to test bandwidth and have it just go forever, go to Staff Picks on Vimeo. Sweet.
Just didn't watch any of it. Over and over and
yep,
over.
It just keeps playing loops and loops and loops, and it's all HD.
You can kind of do that on YouTube, just the quality's not as high.
Right. No, right. Vimeo's really high quality, I found. Then I had the Media Center playing. I had the PS3 playing. I had the Xbox playing. You know, it was everything. Android tablets. It was great. So what I had done is I was able to saturate the Comcast connection at 60 megabits for half an hour, and that was good. And then the wireless access point was showing 30 megabits for sustained. So, and I went around and the videos were good, the audio was good. I was pretty impressed that that was all playing. What I took away from that is, one, getting better hardware helps. So I was proud that that money was well invested. And two, I don't need more than 60 megs. You know, if I had every streaming service I have subscribed to, oh, and I was streaming stuff down from iTunes on the Apple TV, so not caching a movie from my iMac, but pulling it straight from Apple. That's high quality, high bandwidth too. But if I had all of those going at once, and I was pulling in 60 megs, and everything was working, I don't need more than that.
Right.
So I was kind of proud. I like, I don't have to upgrade to 100 megs down.
It's a good test. You know, yeah. From that step. What's your up? And Nathaniel,
oh,
switch,
it's like let's, six.
Let's yeah. switch over so on the Hangout side we get you yeah. back.
Thanks. No, it's only six up. So that's kind of, for things like this, if I were broadcasting and doing Hangouts a lot, then I might need more than that.
Well, see, and that's the problem I run into is I did just upgrade to 100 down, but I still only get, like, they say 10 up with yeah. that 100 down speed. So for me, all I want is just higher upload speed. Like, it takes me so long to upload each yeah. episode of the show. If I could just have, like, you know, 100 down, 100 up, I'd be perfect. I would pay more for that. But yeah, you're right. The download, we're not going to saturate, you know, more than a 60 megabit connection for most of us.
Yeah. And I'm going to monitor as we go through here on PFSense, and it looks like 2.5 to 3 megabits up right now is what I'm needing for the Hangouts. But if you think about your HD streams from Vimeo and Netflix, they're probably not more than 3 to 5 megs. Even the high quality is my guess. Maybe someone knows better. So if you add those all up, it takes a while to get to 60. So the problem is probably not the pipe coming in. It's the distribution inside the house.
Yeah, so they make, that's a great point.
With Open Mesh, you know, it definitely, you can buy them on Amazon, so you can use Jim's link. I didn't because they were out of stock at the time. And FYI, if you order it directly from Open Mesh, you got to be there to sign for it.
Oh.
So the fact guy, that was a little bit disappointing that I was all ready to work on it in the weekend and I had to wait till Monday to tell them to ship it to the Kinko's, or they don't call it Kinko's anymore, but FedEx office, and I could pick it up there. That was fine, but I didn't know that ahead of time. But they make smaller routers. This is their granddaddy of AC wireless high gain antenna router or wireless access points. So you can get smaller ones. You can get ones that are just 2.4 gigahertz if you just want that for coverage. You can get ones that are just 5. You can get ones with Ethernet built in. So there's a lot of flexibility. So if you had a bigger house, you may say, okay, I want one big router in the central location, and then I'm going to put a smaller one out by the porch to cover the patio or the garage. And I'm only going to use 2.4 gigahertz because I'm only concerned about coverage. So you have some flexibility in dealing with that. And what I also learned from this is I like their web interface quite a bit, and it makes me jealous that I don't have an OpenMesh CloudTrax router because I don't have any visibility in the wired clients other than PFSense.
Gotcha.
Cool. No, that's shoot, this is like now I'm thinking, ooh, I wonder how I get, you know, maybe this is the next wireless. When my son moved in, we had some problems with the wireless access point. I don't have a big house, so I only need one. But now I'm kind of thinking, ooh, this is kind of $230. That's a little pricey for a router.
Yeah. No, yeah, that's wireless. That's just the wireless. That's not even a router. So right, if you don't you don't have a router,
right,
you got to either build or have that on your own.
Right,
just an access point.
So that does not have router capabilities in if you wanted it to.
Nope.
Okay.
All it does is take your WAN connection and broadcast it out.
Wow. All right.
So I'm happy with it. You know, one device to manage, the visibility, the guest network configuration, it's been good. One problem that I'll report, and this was known in the thread and the Home Server Show forums, is that devices would drop off unexpectedly, especially Apple devices. So we knew that going into it. And I didn't see that other than what my symptom I had early on was like everything would drop off for half an hour, no clients, and then it'd come back up. So I reached out to their support, which is real good, as I expected from what I read from others. And they said, yeah, we know that's a problem, especially with Apple devices. We'll upgrade you to the 6.0 beta firmware. And their upgrades are from them in the cloud down to your device. And you can set your time window, like don't upgrade during the day, just do it at 2 a.m. And so they upgraded me to the 6.0 beta, and it was fine. I didn't have any problems after that, except for the EcoBee 3 thermostat. So the EcoBee 3 is actually an Android device, according to the client graph in OpenMesh, and it would just disconnect, and then it wouldn't reconnect. And I'd go to join network, it would have the right SSID, it would have the right password in it, and just couldn't join. The only way I could get the EcoBee back on was to use my iPhone and walk through their guided connection, which is great, by the way, compared to other devices like that, and then it would join back in. So I reached out to OpenMesh again and said, this is what I'm doing, this is the device, and they said they've heard of problems like that, so they're trying another version of their beta firmware, and we'll see what happens. That's the only problem I've had on their 6.0 beta.
So how does the guest network integrate with your pfSense then? Because I'm guessing if it only has one connection to that pfSense box, how does it distribute, or how does it know the internet connection versus the LAN for your other wired clients that are running to your pfSense box?
Yeah, okay, so that's a really good question. Good thing you pointed out. So everything goes through the pfSense, but there's one connection to pfSense, and then that connects to the cable modem.
Right.
But what happens is on the OpenMesh, it does its own DHCP NAT for the guest network.
Okay.
So it separates it out in a separate VLAN. So the guest network IP address is 10.x.x.x. You know, I don't know. And then since I've said to bridge the second internal SSID with my DHCP, pfSense, or my wired clients, then it gets DHCP on the internal network from pfSense.
Okay. Gotcha. So That's a simple way to do it. Whereas I'm doing guest networking on my pfSense box, and it's far more complicated than it needs to be. I mean, it's not too bad, but running it on something like the OpenMesh would probably be a lot easier.
Yeah. Yeah. It was very easy to set up, and it's fitting my needs right now. If you start thinking about segmenting your network devices more thoroughly, you get a lot of complexity. So eventually I may choose to do that with this new Netgear switch with VLAN and say, okay, these type of devices are going to be on this VLAN and these type of devices on this. So maybe all your smart home camera bulbs, Alexa, are on this segmented network but still reachable. It's a hard challenge to say, I want these on the network, but I don't want to risk security by having them there.
Because you could do tagging, right? Because I'm sure the OpenMesh, like the guest network, kind of like if you use the Airport Extreme and you wanted to create a guest network, you know, you can tag that as a VLAN. And you could do something like that to make it a little more complicated. But I had the same problem. So I was doing the guest networking on my Airport Extreme. When I started to get into tagging and all that sort of stuff, I'm like, you know what? I have an old Airport Express. There, that is my. I have another NIC on the box.
Yeah,
my guest NIC, and we're good to go. It's a lot simpler if you can divide it out that way physically on different ports than when you're trying to do tagging and VLANs and all that stuff.
Yeah, you could do it that way. That would definitely be, you know, physical hardware ports and using pfSense to segment it out. That would be another way to do it. I'm just trying to keep it simple and supportable.
Well, yeah, that's what I like about it. That's why I'm kind of interested now in this OpenMesh.
Yeah, the other thing that's pretty sweet about the configuration is you can do you could schedule it So you could say, I could create an SSID for the kids, right? Kid wireless. And I can tag all their devices into that, and then I can schedule it to shut off at midnight so that their devices have no wireless from midnight to 6. Now, I'm not doing that, but you can schedule Wi-Fi. You can also do bandwidth throttling. So on the guest network, I've throttled the bandwidth of any single device down to 5 megabit down and one up. So if someone comes onto the guest network and has something running that's sucking down bandwidth or things, it's not going to compete or interfere or take away from my internal network.
But you've already proven it's hard to throw. I mean, even if you had somebody come on and start right, you threw everything you could at it. But
yeah,
I get it. You could do it, right, in that application. Yeah.
Yeah.
That which would be really like handy for like a church.
Yeah.
The churches struggle with this, right? We broadcast Wi-Fi into our sanctuary because people are checking, you know, they want to connect to the Wi-Fi when they come in.
Sure.
And we had to do some throttle down at that point to be like, okay, no one can get any more than a, you know, than a meg, so to speak, because they should be paying attention.
You would be surprised.
Oh, I'm guilty. I'm totally
grocery
guilty.
List, Facebook, check this. Oh, I got to totally send grandma guilty. A note, you know.
I have, now, the, you know, I have the Bible app just pop up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I was reading scripture. Well, I have a lot of empathy for churches that are working as a semi-business, because you think about it, Wednesday nights and Sunday mornings is when everybody comes and connects, right? And that's when you need a lot of bandwidth and capacity. But then during the day, it's a moderate amount of people coming in and out for meetings and things. So, you know, like a business, they're paying for all this bandwidth and capacity they need for a very short window during the week. And then they're overpaying for a good part of the week when they don't need it. So that's a tough spot to be in. And especially in church buildings that are older, built with, you know, limestone and concrete and brick and big thick walls and basements that are 16 feet underground and, you know.
Yeah.
It's a challenge. I'm very empathetic to the people who set that up and try to maintain it.
Spaces. Yeah, big open spaces and ways to figure that out. So, no, pretty cool. Nathaniel, we're going to run out of time. I know you got a few more things. I do.
Sure.
I want to get to one thing here before we get back to yours, and we're going to do like a speed round with you in the last couple things we have here. But last week or 2 weeks ago, Mike, and I think maybe it was last week, Mike, you were talking about IPv6. Was that last week we were just talking about?
No, it was two weeks ago.
Yeah. So you asked me the question. You said, you know, your PFSense router picked up IP, or let's just say V6 for the rest of this conversation. So it's hard to say IPv6 consistently. So you'd said your router had picked, or your PFSense had picked that up from, was that you who said it picked it up from?
Yep. And it was distributing it out to all the different devices on my network, yeah.
So, and I said, you know, I know VintSurf. I should just ask Vint, right? So yesterday, no, 2 days ago. Yeah, 2 days ago, I'm in the office in Washington, D.C., headed up to the it was Monday, so it was 3 days ago. Headed up to the second floor, I open the elevator. Who is standing there? VintSurf. So I said, hey, Vint, this is cool. We were just talking about you. And he goes, really? I'm like, yeah, we were talking about IPv6. Well, that's his baby. So he was like, let's go get coffee. I want to hear about it. So
that is cool.
Yeah, we popped over to the other room, grabbed a cup of coffee, and I said, you know, hey, we have, you know, we're talking on the show. I have one of my guys using a PFSense router, picked up V6. And all of a sudden, we all realized, what do we do with this? Like, we're all V4 literate from that standpoint of internal addresses and how to set them up and the guest area and, you know, the non-reportable area and all that other stuff. I realized, man, I don't have a clue what to do with V6. Like, I might have to... And he said, well, he goes, first of all, that's awesome that you picked that up, because that means the cable companies are starting to push that out, right? I mean, we're out of all V4 addresses. Officially, they are gone. I mean, there's just not any left on the planet. So he said, great to hear the cable companies. He's doing a lot of pushing through Google and some of those other things to get the cable companies through. And then I said, well, so what about the – and he goes, don't worry about it. Just turn it on, enable it. It's a stack that runs right beside V4. So for the most part, you don't really need to do anything. If you want to do it internally, you can. All the devices, any modern device that you have, will have V6 built into it. And it can work with both. You can have V4 and V6 turned on at the same time, and it will do its thing, and it will translate that. It gets a little screwy when it goes out to the web onto a site that is not supporting V6. but he said that they're two stacks that should work together. So you and I was like, oh, okay. I was like, but what about internal addresses? He goes, don't worry about that.
You know, so you internal, know, it's okay to keep IPv4.
Oh yeah.
And okay.
Yeah. Oh yeah. If you want to do it that way, but it did, you know. I got about 20 minutes with him to talk through. We talked about other things than that, but it did. I did realize I should probably brush up on a video or two on V6 and just kind of get some education around it, because I think it's coming to a store near you here pretty quick. And this is one of these things, as a tech guy, we're going to want to know about. But I just thought it was ironic that we had just been talking about it, and I said, oh, maybe I'll get – and I didn't really even think I'd get a chance to see Vint, and boom, there he was.
Just, you know, sometimes doors are opened, and crazy. Literally the door opened for you. So
we were just talking about you.
And said, the more – so I went out – as soon as we had that podcast, I went and watched some videos. I did that same exact thing, and I realized actually – that I was not getting that address from the cable company. Oh. PFSense had IPv6 enabled, and it was issuing addresses to each device. After I kind of went through all the settings of PFSense and tried to figure out, okay, am I really getting this from the cable company? I realized I'm not. So,
not as good as we thought.
Not as good as we thought.
There are right. some, though. There are some.
There definitely
yeah, I
are
think
some.
Comcast
and I
is
think
doing
Cox
it.
Actually does do it in some areas, yeah. Just not with me right now. So
they're probably enabling it around, you know, as they go. They're probably, it's a replacing equipment or whatever.
Right.
They are probably setting those things up. So I've got some homework to do to kind of figure out, like, what's the average guy I need to know about V6 coming up, because I think it's not all the way here yet, but they are definitely pushing. And if you're going to use it in any capacity, it's on its way, guys. I mean, like I said, we're out of V4 addresses. So it's kind of interesting to see how that comes about. And, of course, V6 gives an infinite amount of addresses more than V4 ever did. And we always ask him, you know, and he gets asked all the time, you know, so why didn't you make it bigger, like when you were setting up V4? And he said, at the time, you know, we started calculating that out, and this was like 1976. And they were like, eh, that should be good enough, you know. And so interesting to see how the world has changed, and you never know. And in this new V6 standard will support, he gives me that number, whatever that is. I don't never understand it when he says it. So it's coming, and you might want to do some brushing up on V6. Speaking also in Virginia, that's our friends at LastPass are out there as well. I didn't get a chance to visit them this time. I might do it the next time when I'm out there. But Nathaniel, you've been using the enterprise version of it, and LastPass, if you haven't looked on the web recently, if you just use it on your phone, they've gone to a new version. I mean, V4 is ready and is out there, and it's big windows and big icons. Are you using that full time? What do you think of the new interface?
Yeah, I'm on 4, and part of the perk of being in the enterprise version is they send you these heads up a lot earlier. So you know it's coming, and get prepared and let your team know that when this changes, it's expected. It's not a security problem. And it's fine. I don't go to the vault very often. I just depend on the form fills and things. I'm not a big lots of icons guy, because when you have 300 to 400 to 500 sites, you don't need a big icon per one. But I think it's a nice improvement. It's a little more intuitive. I think it's a good change. At the enterprise side, one of the reasons we went to it at work is because a bunch of us were using the personal version anyway, and we really love the shared folders feature at work. So being able to set up a shared folder for the network team and a shared folder for the AV team or the Apple group, where we can put a lot of these repetitive sites and logins and information and share them among people, has really been beneficial. And it's a really good way for succession planning. So if the network guy has a bunch of logins that he's storing in LastPass and shared with me, and he ends up leaving the company or whatever, we can just take that folder and assign it to his replacement. And all of a sudden, the new person has got that entire list of random, obscure, can't-type passwords for all the services that he was using ahead, rather than, hey, would you mind printing out all the passwords you use for this and this, and, you know,
And depending on the, we have to change all the passwords because somebody laughed.
Right. Well, there's the advantage. If nobody knew what the passwords were to start with because they were stored in LastPass, we don't have to change it as often. You know, not everything works that way, but right. it's been a real boon for us in just simplicity and less headaches. And, you know, whether it's logins for different vendor websites that need to be shared among multiple people, it's just a more secure, easy way to do it. The only thing I'd point out with it is you can have multi-factor just like anything else, but the nice feature with the enterprise version, as an administrator, I can retain the ability to reset someone's master password. So if they get hit by a bus or if they forget what it is over a long vacation, I can reset it for them and they can get back in. I can't read all the passwords that people put in there, but I can get it reset so that it can be retained that way.
Yeah, it's a good feature.
Yeah, it's not on by default. It's not on by default, so you have to choose to do it. But we feel like it's a good feature to have in our organization.
Do you know what they charge per on the enterprise? Is that a per seat basis or?
Yep. Okay. Yep, and it's per count, and I think you know there's discounts for education or whatever, but it's not much. Like, it's more than if you were to pay the home premium, which is what, 12 bucks a year?
12 a year.
So it's a little more than that, but it's very affordable. And for the peace of mind and the ease of use and cost savings, I think it's money well spent.
And you get in the folders that you're talking about, those aren't shared data folders. Those are shared password folders, right?
Yeah. So just like you can make a shared folder in the home premium, you know, personal version, mm-hmm. and share it with someone, it's like folders on steroids.
And do you have secure notes as well?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And so some storage associated with that. It won't be a lot, but...
Oh, yeah, it's got to be minimal. It's, you know, so we can put notes in there, like, here's the BIOS passwords for these machines, you know, things that you don't want to put in Google Docs or on a Word file stored somewhere. You can put it those kind of secure things in notes and just share it very easily. It's you know... just like at home, but I'm really happy with it.
Well, we're going to do a big feature on V4 next week, so we won't dig into that. Amber will be back, and she'll want to share. They were just talking about V4 the last time I was there, which I was thinking was last fall, and they were like, hey, you want to try V4? And so it was pretty cool to see that, and they have wrapped that up and released that out to the public. So if you haven't checked in a while, head out to lastpass.com, log in, check it out. I think you could still go back to the old version if you want to.
Yep, for a while.
I think you have to enable it. I'm sure it's coming full time, so something to get used to. Last question for you, Nathaniel. We always ping you for Chrome and Chromebooks because you work with them so much. Give us a quick update on what you're doing there in the school district.
Sure. In my school district, we now have 5,400 Chrome devices under management.
Wow.
Yeah, fortunately, that's less than the number of students, but it's going well. What has happened in the education world is there's so much online testing, high-stakes testing that the state requires or whatever, is now the vendors are catching up, and we deliver those in Chromebooks, and it works very reliably. So the Chromebooks that we manage, we just say put this application in kiosk mode, so at the login screen before someone logs in, a student logs in, they click a menu, choose the app, launches the application without caring who it is, then they log into the test and take it. And fortunately our wireless is very robust, our bandwidth is plentiful, and now instead of taking turns in the lab to come and do these tests over 6 weeks, we can deliver an entire grade level in a building in the classroom. And so that's one of the nice features. What we started looking at is some of the other Chrome devices. So Chrome boxes, which are little mount on the back of your monitor PCs that run Chrome, but they're just little boxes instead of laptops. They're real affordable, easy to set up and use, and we can use those as kiosks. So it just goes to this one app or this page or, you know, walk-up stations in the library. And then started looking at Chrome Bit, which is their tiny little stick. No, you know, like your Intel NUC stick. So it's got a HDMI port, a USB port, and power. That's it. And what we potentially could do with those is, you know, digital signage. So set up a digital display, whether it's slideshow or video or feeds or website, and connect it to a TV and just put it up on the wall.
Not very cool.
See?
Yeah, Very cool. There's some interesting things there. Every time I have you on, I reconsider Chrome, and then you go away for a couple of months, and I stop.
Yeah. Well, I still have my Chromebook. I have a personal Toshiba Chromebook that I like to use, yeah. And I like it because of the battery and the screen's good, and it's simple and quick. And but I've switched to using a laptop full time at work instead of a desktop. And so now everything's kind of on there, and so I carry a full Windows laptop around now, and I don't use the Chromebook. I used to have my full desktop at work, and then I carried the Chromebook everywhere, but now that I have a laptop, I've sort of just gone back to using that.
Yeah, yeah, everything I need's on Windows, so it's one of those kinds of things for me. Yeah. Just makes sense, and we have had some MacBooks come into the organization, and so we've got folks on Mac. Our Java developers are all Mac mm-hmm. clients, and I guess if I pushed hard enough, I could probably move that direction. That's easier for me to be on Windows than anything else. So, no, very cool. One quick announcement. Mike Wieger beat me to the punch today, but, of course, we talk about the Amazon Echo quite a bit. I had somebody contact me, Mike, this week. Echo, not so good for them, and they were like, I know you guys push this. Yeah, I know you guys have a love fest for the Echo, but I don't like it. So I was like, sorry. But Spotify has come to the Echo, and I know you're a Spotify guy. I've heard you talk about how you just won't move to Apple Music because you're such a Spotify guy. Did you try it already? Did you get out there, establish your account?
I did.
Is it working?
Works fantastic. Yeah, I love it. It was the partnership I was waiting for, right? This is the music service I use. I was not willing to switch music services just to try out the Echo with music, so our solution used to be to Bluetooth, which worked just fine, but now it's even easier, and I actually haven't told my wife about it yet. I'm sure she's going to be pumped when I go out there and tell her what she can do with Spotify. But, I mean, on that same note, I am still having trouble with Echo and my lights. They are not playing well together. It started about a month ago, and it just has not come back full featured yet. So I understand if some people are having issues, there are still some bugs to be worked out. Yeah. But yeah, the Echo announcement was awesome.
I have problems with my kids turning the lights off. And then, of course, there's no automation in the world that's going to work if there's no power.
If the switch is on, yeah.
I know. The see, house of the future hardwires all those things, right?
Right.
So they're hardwired on.
Yes. Yeah. My issue is when I have her turn a light on, she turns it on, but to the dimmest setting. And then I say dimmed 100% or turn all the way up or whatever you say, and it'll turn back off.
Yeah.
And then you tell her to turn back on, it turns on to the dimmest setting. So that's the issue that we've been running into here.
Nathaniel's saying he has not gotten Amazon Prime Music to work very well with the Echo. Tony is kind of in the same boat. So there's some problems. Amazon Music is not good.
No. I mean,
it's terrible.
Come on, guys. I want to use your product, but yeah.
It hasn't been touched. Like, they must have fired all the developers right after they released it. I don't think it's been touched in 2 years.
Well, doesn't it run on, like, Acrobat Air or something yes. like that?
Last time I checked, it was, something terrible. Now, I use Prime Music all the time, and it works great. So play this on Prime Music.
Yeah, but, you know, I have that, and I want to upload my music to the Amazon Locker so I can say, play Jimmy Buffett or whatever. And if I upload it, it sometimes works. But what I don't get is if I go to the Amazon Music app, I can't just say send to my Echo unless I turn on Bluetooth or something. But if I go to the Alexa app, the search and finding my own music that I owned and uploaded is terrible. So unless I can call it out by name and get it to work, which is not often, you know. I want it to work because I love the speaker. I love that you can do it. And when it's easy, you know.
It's not, though. It's not. Yeah. It's not It's not easy. That part is not. And they got to fix that. It's trying to find music. Well, and Amazon Music isn't a lot. I mean, there's some stuff on Amazon Music, and they're getting more and more. You know, the stuff that comes with Prime, the Prime Music piece. That you get when you're a Prime member, you get a whole bunch of music for free. It's just not everything you want. And so you're right. You want to upload your own music.
And you can. I do. You know, you pay, what, $20, $25 to upload your own.
$20 a year.
Yeah. You know, it's fine. I'm willing to do that. But the uploader process is kind of clunky. And
yeah, it's terrible.
And then when you can't even find it in the Alexa app, I don't know. Maybe they got to get those two apps to kind of merge or something.
They need to develop a whole new app system. I mean, it's they haven't given it much time. It's one of those kinds of things that I think they built it to be us too, but then they kind of just we'll just we just won't do anything with it. So it's a little bit underwhelming when you think about the music piece. Mike, your lights, mine were great. Philip Hughes, yep.
I don't know what it is. It's something. But
except when the kids turn the lights off. Stop.
See, and that's the only way that fixes mine is flipping them off and back on, turns it on full brightness, and that's been a solution.
Got it. So. Yeah. Well, we talked about earlier, we got some ways to go when we think about home automation. There's still a lot of things that need to come together to make that bulletproof. This is like going on a PC in 1995, right, when you think about where home automation is today. And it was ugly in those days. I made a living off of fixing people's computers and drivers. I mean, that was unbelievable. We don't even think about drivers for the most part unless you own a Surface tablet or a Surface book. Apparently, Microsoft can't get its own drivers to work right on either the Pro, the Surface Pro 4, or the Surface Book, which is a little disappointing in that case as well. But We've got a ways to go with that. I do want to remind you that as we kind of wrap things up here, one, thanks for putting up with our dual-purpose blab and hangouts going on at the same time here. They seem to have worked. The chat room seemed to be holding up pretty well. At one point, we had half and half, so I think we had 9 listening on the hangouts and 11 or so listening in the blab, and so that worked out pretty well. If you're just joining us on Blab for the very first time, we do this every Thursday night, 8 p.m. Central, 9 Eastern, out at theaverageguy.tv/live, and you can come out and get more geekiness. I'm trying to work my schedule so I'm not traveling on Thursdays. That last year was a big deal. It seemed like I was always in the air on Thursdays, and I actually planned this D.C. trip. I got a call yesterday from Southwest. This was pretty cool. I was on a conference call with somebody, and on my laptop, the phone rang. And I said, hold on one just a sec, so I answered it. And it was Southwest telling me my 750 flight had been moved to 950. Well, you can't move a flight 2 hours and not have it get you stuck somewhere. And I would have been stuck in Chicago. So I called our travel and transport and said, hey, can you reroute me? Because I'm not going to make it home. And she's like, if you go to the airport right now, there's a flight you can get on that, you know, but you got to go right now. So I jumped on the metro, zipped to the airport, ran across the airport, got there. The lady, as she was giving me the ticket, said, I need you to go right now on this. You know, I kept hearing this. As I ran through security, and they got me through, and I ran down to the thing, they were calling my name as, you know, James Collison, if you, you know. I got right on the airplane. The plane happened to just be going straight through from Chicago to Omaha, so they stopped. I didn't have to get off the plane. So I got to pick my seat wherever I wanted because everybody was off, you know, Southwest. And then I got to Omaha. It was super quick turnaround in Chicago. From the time I left the conference room in D.C. till the time I got to Omaha, 4 hours, 45 minutes. That's fast.
That's efficiency.
Yeah, it was scary efficiency. But, I mean, you know, just imagine all that technology worked to get, you know, to make that happen. And so, but all to be home on Thursday. So if you join us, I'm trying to do more of that Monday through Wednesday instead of Monday through Thursday. So we're here Thursday nights, 8 p.m. Central, 9 Eastern. A couple reminders before we go. That one, I mentioned the Amazon affiliate link. We appreciate it, you, when you do that. Two, Suit and Scrubs is back.
Yes, we're back. And we're back for good. Like we have stuff in the can. We are ready to go every 2 weeks. We got some interviews. We are good to go. Yeah, Suit and Scrubs, 2980network.com is where you can find that show. It's me and my wife doing our comedy based on our relationship. So yeah, it's been fun. It was on hiatus, but now it's back.
And the latest one should be called Wait For It, because you got to get all the way to the end to catch the special.
That was kind of the joke, because I've already had some people ask, so why was that called Bieber Fever? Like, well, I'm like, well, I don't know. I guess you'll just have to listen again.
Wait for it.
You missed it. I the first person I told you missed it, and they said, no, I didn't. I said, you missed it.
Well, and I didn't get all the way to the end, and you said, oh, no. You want to get all the way to the end.
So yeah, it's embarrassing. Don't listen to the end.
It was good. A reminder, too, a bunch of good podcasts. In fact, there's a new of course, Rich Hayes doing Observe Tech, and that's always good on Windows. Mike's doing Open Mic Night. We have Suit and Scrubs. That's available. The Agnostic Tech podcast is back. At least they have a new episode. So if you're fans of Darren and And John, you might want to go out and take a peek. Dave actually recorded a home server show, I think, or Surface Geeks. Maybe he only got a Surface Geeks. It's the first one in 3 months. And so you might, if you're a Windows fan, you might want to go out and take a peek at
and
it.
And Smart Home HQ. That's been my favorite lately.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That one's been rocking. Yeah, yeah, I know some really good shows on the Geeks Network. And so if you haven't listened to those yet, thegeeksnetwork.com. Of course, we want to mention that the AverageGuy.tv platform is driven, powered, and managed by the Christian Johnson here, although I can't podcast him with him anymore unless it gets a security clearance of some kind. The platform, both web hosting and media hosting, both powered by Maple Grove Partners. Get secure, reliable, high-speed hosting from people you know and trust. For more information, visit maplegrovepartners.com. Of course, we say thanks to Roger for streaming us live on WLMN. Is it WLMN? Am I getting that right? Or is it just WLMN?
Yeah, WLMNradio.com.
LMN, right? I mistyped that in the notes. So WLMN Radio out in Grafton, West Virginia on terrestrial radio. So Roger, thanks for doing that. You can also listen to Home Gadget Geeks on the new Android and iPhone app, both live and recorded versions, all in a single app. Search Home Gadget Geeks in the Play Store or the Apple iTunes area, and you can download that for free. Super cool. That kind of kicked us off Mixlr. Somebody asked me the other day, are you still on Mixlr? And I'm going, nope, we've got 100% on Spreaker, although apparently someone has decided to drop Spreaker from there. I don't know who that would, who'd be crazy enough.
Some poor college kid who doesn't want to pay for it.
Well, listen, I only use Spreaker because it's free, right? I'm full disclosure. I'm on a great plan with Spreaker.
Yeah, I was paying $20 a month for about 7 listeners on Spreaker.
I couldn't afford it. We get a couple hundred out there on Spreaker, so we appreciate LastPass for supporting that app. And again, reminder, they'll be on next week to walk us through the new version of LastPass and all the kinds of good stuff. Amber will be here to get that done, and just a reminder again, every Thursday, 8 p.m. Central, 9 Eastern, just about everyone. Although, in the newsletter, if you want to sign up for our newsletter, we have a sign-up out there at theaverageguy.tv. I am woefully behind on the newsletter. If you've been waiting for one from me, I apologize. I need to sit down. In a week, I'll be traveling again. I'll try and get some writing done. The plane is a great place to write those kinds of letters. We'll try and get you updated. 8 p.m. Central, 9 Eastern, Thursday nights, AverageGuy.tv/live. We'll stay around for some post-show, so if you're on Blab, I will probably drop the Hangout link for post-show, and we'll stay around here for a few minutes on Blab. With that, we'll say goodnight, everybody.